Welcome to the London Buddhist Centre's podcast, bringing you the Dharma and guided meditations. If you found value in listening, please consider making a donation. We hope you enjoy this episode.
I thought I'd start actually with the shrine, because we've got this wonderful shrine to Bhante Sangharakshita, the founder of the Triratna Buddhist order, who died a year ago today. So for us it's an important day today, and Surya Gupta was leading a ritual just this afternoon to commemorate Bhante. Bhante just means reverend teacher. But you can see his photograph is below an image of the Buddha. I remember when I first came here, I was 25, I came on a Wednesday night from art school. And I remember thinking how embarrassing that they've got. Well, I thought I was at Goldsmiths Art School, where, you know, art was dragging a burnt piece of tyre around a car park, you know. You know, the idea of having a gold figure was like, you know, just like so embarrassing. It was so then. You know, I thought it would at least be a video installation, you know. Actually, I remember thinking how embarrassing, and at the same time how wonderful. Interestingly, I remember that both at the same time, thinking how then, and then thinking at the same time, someone thinking, isn't that great? Anyway, whatever you think of the figure, it represents your potential. Yeah, really as simple as that. It represents your potential. It's not, and your potential is a mysterious thing. Your potential is not something you have, but it's not something you don't have. And if you ever, sometimes when you're in strong communication with people, sometimes you really can see their potential. And it's a very, in itself, almost mystical experience, because you could see who they could be. And you could see, you know, and when you see that, you sort of see who they really are. And you want to say yes to it. You want to say, yes, that's it, there, you've got it there. I've had that so many times in my life, seeing people's potential, and you want to say to them, what you've got just there, that's it. Live to that. That's who you are. And as you grow and develop, you'll become more of that. But you're also aware that it's still in potential. I find it quite mystical, this whole matter of potential, because you also know that it's not being fully lived up to. And you know it in yourself as well. So actually, even that apparently simple word, that this is a representation of your potential, what we mean by that, I think, is very deep. But that's what the figure represents. It represents your potential, and it represents a potential that you don't realise you've got. It's not just your potential as you think of yourself, who you think you are, what you think you're capable of. It's the potential that goes beyond that, but is not separate from that. It's quite difficult, really, to talk about. As soon as you start to feel like you're moving towards your potential, even if it's only very incrementally, you feel like, don't you, that your life makes sense. You feel like, I'm now living, this is what I'm meant to do, even. You feel like this is what my life has been trying to do all the time, is unfold its potential, if you see what I mean. And you can also feel, can't you, that I'm not living up to my potential. If you go, I've in my life gone through periods of very, very lengthy unhappiness. I'm rather prone to unhappiness, particularly when I was very young. And part of the pain of unhappiness is a sense of a potential being stifled, of a potential that you have being cramped, isn't it? That you know that there's much more to life than this, and you can't find it, you can't get to it, yeah? So you sometimes know potential in its absence, but that's what the figure represents, is your potential. One of the important things about potential is you don't know what it is. And you never quite know what it is. So I've just got back from a solitary retreat, as I said, in Spain, just a two-week one, not very long. 2 weeks on my own. And I'm quite an outgoing, extroverted type, at least I seem to be. Every time I go on a solitary retreat, I arrive, there's an exciting moment where you unpack everything and put in the right place, you put your wheelie bag into the bin, and you think, okay, now what? And you think, that's it. That's all there is to do. Yeah. For the next 2 weeks, it's just you and the things that you've unpacked, you know. And for various reasons, this time I did that, and I thought, what have I done this for? You know, I had this really strong experience of, I don't even like being on my own. You know, this is like such a weird thing for me to do. Had I not become a Buddhist, I would never have ever done it. It would have been unheard of. I rang my mother before I went, and I said, I've got 2 weeks on my own. And she thought, oh, no, I'd hate that. But what I've been discovering in the years of practice is actually, when I'm on my own in those conditions, potentials arise in me which I would never have thought were there. I've just never have known that they were there. Like one evening, quite a few evenings, but one evening I remember, wasn't that long ago, after supper I just sit in an armchair. It was dark by then, and I'd like light a candle. Lovely, living, they had no electricity, so just living by candlelight. Makes you sleep much better because you're not looking to screens all the time. I just sat with the candle, and I sat there for about an hour, you know, just sort of sitting there, not doing anything particularly. I wasn't reading, I wasn't meditating, I wasn't reflecting on, you know, space and time. I was just sitting there, yeah, with the candle on the table. It suddenly occurred to me that this is Saturday night. Hang on, this isn't Saturday night. And Benidorm is just over the mountain. And, you know, they're probably not all sitting on their own with a candle lit, I can tell you. I mean, perhaps they are, and I'm a bit behind the times. But if somebody had said to me when I was young, you know, you'll wonder how you'll spend a Saturday evening sitting in an armchair with a candle lit, doing nothing for an hour, I just thought, I just wouldn't be able to do that. That would be awful. That would be... or I'd think, oh, that would be so spiritual. It wasn't actually either. It was just an experience, a simple experience of being content. And contentment is... it's not... By its very nature, it's not very kind of special. You don't feel very much. It's just like, it's just all right. It's like being an Alsatian, you know. You just sit there. Occasionally scratch an ear, you know. Turn onto the side. You're just sort of all right. But it's... And then on a solitary retreat, you get used to a bit having these times where you just sort of... Quite often, I just sit in the evening and not even mean to. I think, oh, I'll wash up in a bit. Perhaps it was that. Putting me off, you know, and I just say, I'll just sit here. And I just say, I actually don't particularly want to do anything else. I just sit here. And it didn't feel very strained, and it wasn't me even trying to sit there. I just didn't, just so I know, I'll just sit here a bit longer. And it's only getting back here and into my emails and into my work and in my life, I realise, golly, that's... I would never have known that was part of what I could do. Just sit there for an hour on a Saturday evening with a candle lit. Now that might not... You might think a big deal. but contentment is probably one of the rarest human gifts. Discontent is ubiquitous, isn't it? But just being content, which is no special thing, and yet it's terribly special. It's so rare, and when you experience it, it's a bit like the teenage version of you is proud of you. You know, if I could go back through time and meet myself as a very unhappy 13, 14-year-old and say, I'll be able to, by that time, sit in a room and do nothing for an hour and be content and not be in a big storm of, you know, agony in my mind, I'd be like impressed with myself. You see what I mean? And that's what living up to your potential means. It's living up to the person you hoped to be when you grew up. Do you remember when you were young, you thought, yeah, but when I grow up, I won't have those mood swings. I won't be agonizing in my mind about what people think of me. I'll be like organized. You know, my room won't be a mess. People will, like, you know, and then you get older and older and it seems to keep on being delayed. Living up to your potential is like living up to, in a real way, what you hoped for yourself. Like I was reading, I will get onto something in a minute. I was reading The Odyssey, Homer's book, The Odyssey, which I've never read before. You know, I was very poorly educated. I did very badly at school. In fact, when I was in my junior school, they thought I was what they called in those days educationally subnormal. That's how they phrased it, because I couldn't read until I was quite late. So the idea of me reading The Odyssey, I always thought things like that were for sort of posh people who'd been to university and studied Greek or something, or at least could pronounce the names, which I still can't pronounce. But, you know, there I was every morning reading something of The Odyssey before I meditated. And that's what living up to your, living your potential, it's like living the life that you would have hoped for yourself. Now, what this figure is getting at, though, is that has no, we don't know how far that goes. In fact, Buddhism would say that actually it's infinite, that it can, your potential keeps opening up into realms of experience that people normally worry about because it feels religious. We've got this big word religion now, which people are very nervous of. It's such a shame because really all it's saying is that there are realms of human experience which go beyond things that you could easily chat about in a pub. And it's not because you become religious, it's just that human potential has the potential to keep opening up. Now we know that on another level, a much more obvious level, which is the level of human invention. We still don't know how much human invention can achieve. Like, you know, we've just sent a something out of our solar system, haven't we? Yeah, we've sent a probe out of the solar system, haven't we? That's unthinkable, even quite recently. We're still, you know, human ingenuity and creativity and all of which is coming out of human minds is still finding that it can discover more and more things. We actually don't know, even on that level, what human potential is. We haven't got to the edge of it. We haven't got to the point where we say, okay, that's about as far as we can go, folks. You know, we don't seem to be able to get to a limit, do we? Now, this figure is saying that's true in the depths of your own mind and heart, that there is no limit to your potential, that your potential isn't a thing that you arrive at. It's like a guiding star that you move towards. Yeah? So everything that we're doing on this course is about how do I uncover, discover, follow up, explore my potential. And one of the ways all religious traditions have done it is try to make an image for it, because it helps you externalize it and imagine it. Yeah. Well, it helps you to some degree. It can also hinder, but it can help. So everything we're trying to do is about uncovering our potential, which surely must be what we're here to do, is to uncover our potential. And we don't know what our potential is. Sometimes you can have a really difficult experience and to your great surprise you discover resources that you didn't know you had. It's one of the great things to discover in life, that that potential can rise to difficulty, because there's going to be difficulty, you know, however you live. What you hope from your life is that you can discover potentials that can actually rise to meet difficulty rather than collapse back. My own life, I think, has been, unfortunately, very touched by sort of fear. I've been a very fearful sort of person. So I've tended to sort of get in the way of my potential to rise to difficulty. I've got better as I got older, but you know, that's been a strong habit in my life, fearfulness. And you'll all have strong habits in your life which get in the way of your potential. And you know that already, don't you? If you have a moment's reflection about your life, you know that actually that's getting in the way of my potential. And that hurts you when things get in the way of your potential. Yeah. You don't want that. It's just it's difficult to work out what you do about it. Yeah. So that's always where we're trying to go, Surya-Gupta and I, on this course, is towards opening out our potential. But where we need to start is we need to start, well, Buddhism starts with your mind. Yeah. You could say it starts in two places. It starts with your potential, imagined here by this figure, whether you relate to that figure or not, don't worry about that. It starts there, and it starts with your particular mind you have now, and what is going on for you now, right now. Yeah. So the first part of this course, The Journey and the Guide, is, well, the first 2 weeks, this week and next week, are to do with owning your life. Yeah. Taking ownership of your life. You can't realise your potential and be blind to who you are. That won't work. Sometimes people try to have a potential, but it aim towards a potential or an ideal, but it's based on not wanting to know things about themselves, or it's based on not knowing themselves very well. And we inevitably don't know ourselves very well. It's much more difficult knowing yourself than you think. You are, to yourself, like another person that you have to learn how to work with. And I'm still discovering that. And you will be discovering that. That's part of it, yeah? That's what makes it interesting. You don't know yet, yeah? So this uncovering your potential starts with taking hold of your life, taking ownership of your life. So Surya-Gupta and I are going to talk about this over these 2 weeks. I think the main thing I want to stress for this week, Surya-Gupta will say more about it next week, is being honest with yourself. Noticing the sorts of thing you think, being honest with yourself. That's how you start to own your life. Is you're honest with yourself, but you're honest with yourself in an interested, curious way, rather than a condemning way. Yeah, you just think, golly, fancy me thinking that. Fancy me feeling so angry about that. Fancy me feeling so needy about that. If you see, it's quite easy for us human beings. We want to be a better person. We want to have our potential. And if we're not careful, we think, I don't like that. So let's just sort of ignore that. Yeah. So this course starts with owning yourself. But what we're trying to help you do that in a way that isn't condemning yourself, because that makes matters worse. Yeah. As soon as you condemn yourself, you're just making matters worse. Some people have got a real habit to do that. I've got a bit of a habit to do that. Some of you will do. I've tried it. It doesn't work. Don't bother. Yeah. But sometimes, because one is worried about condemning yourself, you're not honest with yourself either. So you're trying to treat yourself like someone else you don't know, and that by being privy to their thoughts, their actions and their speech, you're getting to learn who they are. And you're trying to take ownership of that. We'll say much more about that next week. So where that starts is noticing what's going on in your mind. Yeah, we tend to say your thoughts, but thoughts is too grand a word. Most of what happens in our mind is not our thoughts, is it? It's not that we're thinking about, I don't know, the nature of time and space, or even thinking how to get to the airport on time. We've just thought, as it were, pours through us, doesn't it? Thoughts, images, memories, associations, our arguments that we're having in our mind. On my solitary retreat, I was having an argument with somebody in my mind. I kept on saying, okay, I think we've clarified that you need to do something about that. You need to talk to them when you get back, because I've allowed this person to be not very good in some ways, not very pleasant to me, in a way that wasn't in his interest and certainly wasn't in mine. But I haven't said, look, I'm going to ask you to stop doing that. Anyway, so I kept on going through that scenario and kept thinking, okay, yeah, really good point. Next time we see them, let's going to talk about that and we can deal with that. And then I just go through it again. Yeah. And then he said, no. I'm going to say, ha! Well, you would say that. And I think, yeah, great, marvellous point. We've got that. Nailed it. When you see him again, let's do that. To call that thought is too grand, isn't it? Really, it's not. You're not Schopenhauer, for instance. It's just repetitive, driven, associative, often quite noisy stuff, isn't it? Buddhism has got a word for it, which means perpuncture. They think it comes from that gesture that you're. Because the word punk is to do with hand. It comes from a root to do with your hand. So it's sort of saying that your mind does that, doesn't it? It spreads out. It keeps spreading out, connecting one thing with another. And you can live in this highly associative, highly driven, unaware state of mind where you're just lost in it, aren't you? Yeah. So you see that calling that thought isn't right. Because you do think, but that's not like that. This is just noisy, driven, unaware, associative thinking. Yeah, that can be the largest part of your life. If you're not careful, you can live mostly in that, can't you? In noisy, driven, associative thinking. That you even say to yourself, please stop. Like on my solitary retreat, I think, okay, great point. We'll do that when I get home, you know. And then, a day later, I'd find myself back in it again. You can say to yourself, please stop. And even that please stop can become part of that noisy, yeah, why don't I stop? I can't believe I'm thinking about it again. What kind of stupid person am I? Even trying to get your mind to stop thinking becomes part of the problem, because you can't stop thinking. It's not possible. So Buddhism calls that prapuncture. And that's where we need to start, yeah? Noticing prapuncture. And first of all, learning. Golly, those are the sorts of stuff that go through my mind. You know, I had to keep on this solitary thinking, this has really obviously affected you, this situation with this person. What do you need to learn from that? Clearly, the reason why it's being reiterated again and again is it's your mind trying to flag up that you've got to learn something here, yeah? So that you try to notice prapuncture and try to notice what it's trying to tell you. Yeah. So that's one of the things we're going to be trying to work with, is noticing prapuncture. The first thing we're going to try to do is notice it. By noticing, I mean clocking it. I am thinking this sort of stuff. Yeah? And I'm actually often thinking this sort of stuff. Yeah? But not in a critical, condemning way, just in a noticing way. Yeah, if you can, with a bit of a sense of humour, if you can. It's important to have a sense of humour. If you haven't got one, go and get one now. Really, really important. Yeah, because life is difficult and you need a sense of humour. So then we try to, instead of trying to work it out, why am I thinking that, which usually just makes it worse, doesn't it? Why do I keep thinking that? I can't believe it. That usually just gets you more and more stuck in it. So what you need to do, what I try to do, is you keep stepping out of it into, how does it feel in my body to be thinking like this? Yeah. What's happening? So that's all very constructed. It's all very cerebral. It's all very... It's very constructed, isn't it? It's very fantastical. So you can not even notice what's going on around you. if it's very strong, someone can talk to you and you don't hear it, because we're so caught up in what's happening in our mind. So as soon as you notice it, you just say, okay, that's fine, don't worry about that. How does my body feel just now? What's happening in my body just now? In more direct sensory sense, sensual sense, what's going on? Yeah, just try to, so you keep stepping out of prapuncture, out of mental proliferation, out of rumination, as it's sometimes called, into, let me just feel my body, yeah? So I'm going to start now, just say, here's some ways that you can start to work with that internally, and I want to suggest a way to work with it externally, yeah? Because it's not good enough just to work with your mind. That's not enough, that won't work. You need to work with your life. So internally, as a practice during this week, see if you can notice prapuncture, yeah? See if you can notice how it changes a lot. Sometimes it's fairly quiet and sort of happy burbling. I'm too sexy for my shirt, or whatever it is that you burble. Sometimes it's quite agonising, isn't it? Or can be quite agonising and noisy and almost terrorising, self-terrorising it. So you can notice that it changes. Keep noticing it and try quite consciously not to criticise it, because that will make it worse. I mean, you can criticise it if you want to, but that will make it worse, yeah? Try quite consciously not to criticise it and think, okay, let me use that as a cue to feel the body. And if it's very strong, you won't be able to feel your body very much, because so much of your energy is caught up in your mind. Yeah? But that's all right, just feel what you can feel. Yeah? Now, I could say, okay, just do that for the week and then come back and say, yeah, you got on. And what you'd say is mostly you forgot to do it. Yeah? You think, great idea, I must do that. You'll be hard pushed to even remember it by the time you get off the tube. If you could, you'd be enlightened by next week. If you could do that for the whole week, just keep noticing, oh gosh, and stepping out in the body, suddenly you come back and look a bit up. And then you can take over from Surya Gupta Nai. So what we're suggesting is you do these three breathing spaces a day, yeah? They take about 3 minutes. I've sent you all, I hope, unless you booked very late, a recording of me. Have you got it? Yep, good. If you haven't, write, come and talk to me at the end, and I'll tell you how to get it. It's a recording of me. I don't know whether it's any good, but anyway, it's a recording of me doing taking you through a breathing space. Yeah. So takes about 3 minutes, something like that. We'll finish with it this evening. Do that three times a day. Yeah. And what I'm going to ask you to do in a moment is work out when would be good times to do that. You can also, I've also written about it in the book, I can't remember what page it's on, but you'll soon find it. It's very simple, just do that three times a day. Do that every day until you come next week and then talk about how that got on. You see how that's becoming, that's still challenging, but manageable. Yeah. So you might do one on the tube to work, I don't know, one when you, I don't know, one on the loo at work. Sorry to be lavatorial. One on the tube back home, something like that, yeah? And you might think, okay, well, I'll listen to Maitreya Vanda do it, or I might not, or whatever. Yeah. So do three of those a day. Yeah? And what you're doing in the breathing space basically is, okay, what's going on? I bet you a lot of what's going on is mental noise. So let's step out of that into, okay, and how do you feel in the body? Let's take a few breaths, and then let's go back into the day. Yeah? Really simple. Try not to, if you can, you're not supposed to say try not to do things, because people then do them, but try not to be too worried about how that went or not. Just do it. Yeah. Don't think, that had a really good effect, it made me feel really relaxed. Just do it and see what happens over time. Yeah. Because if you have a aim for what should happen, that can get into trouble as well. So that's the internal practice I want you to consider. In a minute, I'll get us to talking in pairs about Can you do that? When will you do that? Yeah. And do it 3 times a day. And then the external practice, in the book I think I've talked about cultivating mastery. I won't go through what psychologists mean by mastery, but what it roughly means is that you do something this week that takes a bit of an effort, that puts your life in order a bit more. Yeah. So you don't need to worry at the moment about some mystical potential. If you're honest with yourself, there are things about your life that aren't working for you, aren't there, right now. Do something about one of those things. Yeah. All you need to do is think, okay, what's the sort of things I put off? You know, I had a friend of mine who used to end up not opening, requests for bills, you know. And he had a really bad habit of it. And of course, they become this terrible presence in his life. And they would literally, it would really freak me out. And it didn't do him any good at all. But he had quite a habit of that. So something that you know you could do something about, and you could do something about it in this week. So 2 suggestions are, what could you do to simplify your life? Yeah, is a simple approach to it. Where do you deregulate your life, and how could you regulate it a bit better? So do you end up being on the screen very late at night? Is that the sort of thing you do? Do you lie in bed first thing in the morning and look through your emails? What do you do that you know actually isn't in your interest, but you feel compelled to do? Something sort of simple in that way. And we all do stuff like that, don't worry about it. What is there that you could do to simplify your life? So that's one simple way of putting it. Okay, I'm going to try and go to bed at this time, I'm going to get up at that time. But be realistic. So in your pairs, check that it's realistic. And then another way you might do it is then think, what am I putting off that I could do? What do I habitually put off doing? Could I do that in the week coming up? Yeah. So if you do that, if you do what you've been putting off, you'll find that your propensity goes down a bit. So if you're the sort of person who just your whole room is a kind of tip, as it were, and you put off doing anything about it, that weighs on you very much and creates lots of mental noise. When you clear it up, you find that the mental noise quiets down. You have to work on both internally and externally. So you might try and think of what have you been putting off doing that you know that you need to do, really? Can you do it? And it needs to be something you can actually do that you could then talk about next week.